Let's face it, most people get their notion about what management is from their observations and interactions with their bosses, or the stories in the media or on the television and the big screen about maverick businessmen or corrupt organizations. And the truth is that these representations are isolated and incomplete examples at best, and complete or partial misrepresentations at worst. That is why in this episode, and as our third book in the Essentials of Management Review and Risk series, Rachel and I discuss Joan Magretta's What Management Is, How It Works, and Why It's Everyone's Business. And with that, welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast, where Rachel and I take a deep dive into the ideas and practices that will help you become a more effective and respected organizational leader. I am Stuart, and as a retired Army Senior Non-Commissioned Officer, a former hospital executive, and a management instructor, I have been leading and managing for almost 30 years and teaching it for over 15. Rachel is an Army officer and a healthcare practitioner, and while she is relatively new to the gig, she is one of the most talented young leaders I have come across. So thank you for joining us, and we will see you on the other side. Hey you. Before we get back to the show, just a quick reminder, if you're enjoying it, give us that 5-star review and share it with at least one other person who you think will also enjoy it. That's it. Back to the show. Again, hello everyone. I'm Stuart.
And I'm Rachel.
And we are going to jump right into Joan Magretta's book, What Management Is. Now, before we get into it though, I would like to say just a little bit about Joan Magretta and her background, because Rachel and I agree that it's very relevant and pertinent to the style of the book and how she approaches management. So, Joan, before she ever even thought about getting into management and studying in management, she was a tenured English professor for 10 years at a university. Tenured, people.
Yeah.
Tenured. And she gave it up because she didn't really love the job, but mainly because her and her husband were not thrilled with where they were living. She quit, and then she attended Harvard Business School.
A real step down.
So she attended Harvard Business School, and then right after that, landed a management consultant job at Bain. And Bain is a really well-known consulting firm out there. Upon her retirement from Bain, she then worked under her own terms as an editor for the Harvard Business Review, primarily dealing with pieces about strategy. And for those of you that are really aware of strategy, then you would recognize the name Michael Porter, who is the definitive expert on strategy. He came up with the 5 forces of strategy. And Rachel, we will be covering Michael Porter later on this. And actually, Joan Magretta actually wrote a book about Michael Porter's takes on strategy. We will get into that. But she actually developed a good professional and even a friendly relationship with Michael Porter and worked with him through the years. She eventually quit working with HBR. And the reason she eventually quit working with them, she had a frustration over what she saw during that time, is right as the dot-com bubble was happening. Yes. She had a frustration. What she was seeing was a focus on fad management, like taking things that was in the new digital economy,
of course,
and just playing it up and saying the old way of managing is over. It's dead. Management is dead. Long live new management.
Exactly.
Right. She didn't agree with this. She got very frustrated with it. She quit, went on her own. And right at that time is when she wrote her first edition of What Management Is. And We think all of this is relevant, because you can see a lot of once you realize that, you see a lot of these themes or that sort of approach in her book. So now actually getting into the actual book itself, this book compared to the two other books that we've reviewed for this series, The First Time Manager and Welcome to Management, to varying degrees. Well, The First Time Manager definitely was a how-to. I say Welcome to Management was sort of a how-to-be a manager. This book, the title could not be more indicative of what you find inside. It is a very readable, relatable, book about what management is, why it exists, what it does, the purpose behind it. And I think we both agree it does a very good job at it for someone like me who is aware of all these things and have read these things and, you know, deeper and through other avenues. I still found it very informative, very entertaining. But I think someone like you, to a certain degree, Rachel, who's still relatively new, and like you said, have not read a lot of books that dig that deep into the technical part of management, you found it engaging, found it interesting. Yeah. But I think even people that are even less informed about it, she even says she wrote it for employees because they need to understand what
management. And I think that's where her English degree was also really helpful. Yes, like, it's very readable. It's very readable. It's very understandable.
She's great with analogies. Yes. She knows when independent good examples of the business to illustrate the concept she's talking about. So right off from the front, we both very much enjoyed the book. Think it is very worthwhile having. Think it's a great addition. What I will say is I think this is another one of those books. It may not be the best book for every new manager that you have, because let's just face it, folks. Some managers are just going to be effective managers in helping getting the job done. They may not want to go that deep into it. But I do think it's an addition, a good addition for a lot of other managers who do want to sort of take it to that next level and sort of adopt more of a professional mindset about management.
Yes, I agree.
You're a member of this long tradition of what's been happening and what, quite frankly, if you guys don't realize it, what American society is built on.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm going to get into a little bit of how she talks about management and organizations, and that you understand her take on management and the impact that it's had on our society, which very much aligns with what I try to convey when we're talking about management in this podcast.
Yeah, I think the book really helped put management in a historical perspective for me, and like found it in a what's the right word? I don't know. Maybe a, I don't want to say professional, because that in a, like founding it as a profession, that's not really the right word I'm going for. But I guess the first time manager is very much, and I think that's its goal, it presents management as like a series of steps and tasks, not steps, but a series of tasks.
Yes.
Like, here are the tasks to do.
Task,
here's the management
duties,
task. Exactly. Right? Yes. Whereas this book is about, you know, what is the history, not only the history, but like, what are the fundamental principles of management on a 10,000 foot level?
Yes, very good.
And
way to
I
put
think
it.
I, yes, not everybody is interested in that, but for the people who are interested in that, I do think it could help engender a feeling of the community and a feeling of, oh, this is an important, this is something that there are lots and lots of people who study this and engage in this thought process. And there's a deeper community. There's a deeper community here of people that I could try to tap into and find.
And for those that are new to management or even reading it from outside of management, to understand why it exists.
Yes, yes.
What its role was in what we've become, like it or not. What its role is in organizations. And when it is functioning properly, what value it adds.
And the ideas around, like, what am I... Like, the ideas of, like, value creation and stuff, like, that is, she on multiple occasions says these are terms that anybody who really studies management will know. And I didn't know most of them because I've never really studied management. But, like, value creation and the strategy and things like that, like, those are not terms that I'm familiar with, or I wasn't before this book. But then when she explains them, I'm like, oh, okay, so I understand. And, you know, I work in, like, healthcare settings, and she talks about how healthcare settings and nonprofits are a little bit different. And I know we'll touch on that more later, but I do think, like, I found myself thinking a little bit more since I've read this book about what is the value I'm creating, like, as an individual for my patients or my, you know, quote unquote customers of the hospital, right?
Yes.
You know, like, how can we, because they talk about that sometimes with, like I've had a couple patients who had some complaints about other medical professionals, and I've been able to, like, direct them to, like, patient advocacy to be like, hey, and that can be that recovery piece of, I don't know that patient advocacy is going to be able to do anything for them, but they might. And, like, you know, instead of them just sitting in my office complaining about another medical professional, I know of something that might fix this. And it's like that, it's recapturing that potentially recapturing that quote unquote customer.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's things like that I do think we don't think about, especially in organizations that are a little bit more quote unquote nonprofit or quote unquote government type positions. You know, yes. I think it can turn into a, what are we even doing here?
Well, I think in any position, when you're in the trenches and you're doing the job and you're, even if you're managing, you're managing what you know to manage, what you're told to manage, you're not seeing the bigger yeah. picture. And I've always found it very valuable to see the larger picture of how what you do mm-hmm. and what you should be doing mm-hmm. relates to the larger whole, and how management at any level is supposed to relate to ultimate organizational yeah. success and hopefully success as a society mm-hmm. as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. So tying into that, one of the quotes I really like that she hit early in her prefaces about the relationship of management to organizations, because I think people sort of get it twisted a little bit. They get it a little backwards. And I'm going to quote her here. It's a quote, organizations don't just happen by themselves. Management makes them possible. Good management makes them and society as a whole more prosperous.
Yeah.
I think what people have a tendency to do, oh, we have an organization, so now we got to have someone
yes.
manage.
If you, I think if you don't have that historical context, that's what you think.
Exactly.
That's what it feels like yes. is happening.
Yeah. Because first of all, what you start to view is organization as a
you feel like it's always existed.
Itself.
Yeah. It's yeah. like its own entity.
It's actually this beast that has existed yeah. by itself. All an organization is a group of people getting together yeah. to achieve a common purpose. Mm-hmm. And anytime you have that, in a, especially the more complex it gets, you need someone that's going to help coordinate mm-hmm. all those efforts. At the most basic level, that's what management is.
Yeah.
It's just that person that's within that group that has come together to achieve a common purpose. A manager is that person that helps them coordinate those efforts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the big things that I took away from this book is, you know, I do think some versions of organizations have existed for a very long time. I think most militaries, you know, even if they were really smaller, are some type yes. of organization, and militaries have existed forever. But the sheer volume of organizations that we have in society today, that is incredibly recent phenomenon.
Yes, very
I'm talking
recent.
Like post-World War Two, maybe.
Yeah,
and honestly,
started a little bit again, taking it back to the British Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
That's where you started to see the sea change.
Right, right.
Where basically, you really had your big three: religion, mm-hmm. military, and I'm forgetting one.
Government. Yeah,
there
government.
You go. That's it. That's what you had. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd have little pockets of things, but trade even, associations,
yeah,
and stuff like
yeah.
that. But you're right.
It was everybody doing their own stuff.
And then,
yeah.
And then later, the American Revolution, Industrial Revolution. Started changing that. But you're right. We didn't really hit the what we see today until you're right about the war, yeah. post-World War
and
II.
And I think we think of that as, well, that was just inevitable. That was an inevitable thing that happened. But it was not inevitable.
No, it was not inevitable.
And people did things to make the sheer volume of organizations that we have exist today. So anyway, yeah, and I think that you're right. That's where the management, and I can't remember the exact quote she says in the book, but her very brief summary of management is basically that management is, and we said this many times before, but management is getting a group of people to work together,
yes.
which is, can be incredibly basic as like, you know, getting like a little girl soccer team to work together or something, but it can be incredibly complex as getting the entire organization to function towards a common goal.
Yes. On so, several different
anyway,
layers.
Yeah.
Several different, but to relate to that, but to sort of the put a finishing touch on this, relationship between management and organization is, I just want to hit another quote that she said from the preface. She said, quote, management's growing effectiveness has made organizations the vehicle of choice for carrying mm-hmm. out much of the work of modern society. Not the other way around. We are not just talking, and again, as she says, we're not just talking about for-profit businesses.
Yeah.
Organizations and management exist in, as you said, virtually all human endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
So, the point I want to drive home, what we're getting at on here, is organizations that are a result of human effort, and then that human effort required a degree of management, leadership,
exactly.
if you will, which then, as it evolved, turned into these organizations
yeah.
that we recognize today. As
yeah.
we not the other, okay, here's an organization, now we need to put people in it
yes.
to start doing something that has a purpose. Oh, and now that we have these people in it, we need a manager.
Mm-hmm.
That's the exact mm-hmm. reverse of how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
People got together, as they have been for ages and ages and ages, to achieve a common purpose. And then very often, even if it was more of a temporary and informal way, mm-hmm. they had someone that would coordinate those efforts,
yes.
your manager. But as society got more complex and new technologies,
those managers
the world got smaller yeah. in the sense of being able to reach out to mm-hmm. other people. Well, it made more sense to have these set organizations yeah. that were dedicated to something. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. And I think tying that back to when you think of the definition of management as being getting a group of people to work together toward a coordinated goal, it management applying to, instead of, because I think what a lot of people fall into is the idea of management's job is to make sure we accomplish our tasks exactly as the organization prescribes, right? Which I mean is kind of the same thing as getting a goal accomplished, but often those goals are money-based or they're product-based or whatever. Yeah. And I think in that mindset, it doesn't easily apply to, or people don't translate that to nonprofits, right?
Yes.
Or they don't translate that to like healthcare organizations or things like that, or nonprofit healthcare organizations. But when you think of management purely as the job of management is to get the tasks accomplished, because all nonprofits are trying to accomplish something.
Get the task accomplished through the use of other resources.
Exactly, exactly.
But I always like to stress that last yeah. part, because that's what so many people miss on it. But no, yeah, I know you're
yeah. wrong. And so when you think of it from that definition, instead of just, well, management's here to make sure that we make money, you know, then, or to fire people, then
yeah, to when tell you, them what to
exactly,
do.
Exactly. Yeah. When you think of it from that perspective, then it makes so much more sense as to why good management is so important for nonprofits. I have a close, well, it's my sister. I've referred to her before as my friend. She got mad. She was like, she recognized the story. She was like, were you talking about me? I've been downgraded to friend. So anyway, it's my sister. My sister works for.
I think if you're a sister and you refer to him as a friend, that's an upgrade.
Well, hey,
I would tell her that's
she's both. She's both.
So. I would say a lot of sisters, I think that's a compliment, but I get her point.
I was trying to help her be anonymous, but apparently she doesn't care about that. So anyway, my sister, one of my sisters, works for a nonprofit organization, and she is not in a management role, but she has talked about, you know, some of the management things that goes on there, and you know, they're all a bunch of lawyers, and bless them, they don't know how to manage anything. So, and they have people who've been quote unquote managing for 20
years. They
know what to do.
They don't mind sharing them.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, they've got people that quote unquote been managing for 20 plus years, and it's like, have they been managing, you know, or have they been, yeah. you know, but anyway, so I think that just from stories she's told me, I know, you know, how important it is to have good management on all kinds of levels.
But. Well, I really, that is something that I was going to point out is you bringing in the nonprofit part of it and mm-hmm. that's include your sort of traditional what you think about nonprofits that exist to do things for people,
yeah.
not to make money, but for the good of society.
Right,
if you
right.
will. But also nonprofits, you group in your public organizations, yeah. like government work yeah. and stuff. But I really like that in each thing that she addresses, like when she's addressing strategy, when she's addressing mm-hmm. the people management, when she's addressing mm-hmm. all these other things, she goes through all the functions of management mm-hmm. that she always includes how it relates
yeah.
to nonprofits. And she will say it relates to them equally. It just has a different spin. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what I say, and I've always said, because I've done my share of working in nonprofit type of places, mm-hmm. public organizations, is, and in some instances, because it is more squishy and it's a lot harder to define, because it's not, you don't have a bottom line.
No,
you don't have a ROI sheet. Mm-hmm. You don't have all of that. It can be more difficult in a lot of aspects, mm-hmm. managing in that mm-hmm. context. And moving on from how she addresses nonprofits and the role of management mm-hmm. within nonprofits. Also, what I also liked what she addressed in management is that she addresses the importance of management fundamentals mm-hmm. and how management, really the way it's practiced, it still uses the same basic fundamentals that have been developed over the last 100 years. As opposed to what she referred to, and a lot of us refer to, as that fad management approach.
Right.
And again, remember, she was writing this right as the dot-com
yes.
bubble was coming
yes.
across. And as she said, when I read up on her and watched a video with her, she talked about how fad management had sort of taken over, as it tends to do, right?
It does, yes.
I really like she goes back to the basics, to the fundamentals mm-hmm. of the everyday things that have been used by managers and have been proven to be effective over the long haul, over the long term, and really stresses that approach towards it rather than the next big thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I really liked a lot of her, the way, and again, goes back to her having a degree in literature,
yes,
a degree in English. I really liked the way some of the things were worded, and I like some of the quotes she took from other people. And one of the ones I really liked, and the reason I think it appeals to me so much, because I was in an organization for years, that boy, it felt like this person was really talking about my organization.
Yes.
Although the quote is taken from a first century Roman author,
yeah,
and he's talking about his experience in the military. But here's his quote. And a lot of you may recognize this, you managers out there, so I mm-hmm. can't be the only one that can relate to this. But here's the quote. "We trained hard, but every time we were beginning to form into teams, we would be reorganized. I was to learn later in life that we tend to meet new situations by reorganizing. And a wonderful method it can be for creating the illusion of progress while producing confusion, inefficiency, and demoralization."
Yeah.
End quote.
Yeah, that was, yeah, I also, when
can
I read.
Can you relate to that,
yes,
one, Rachel?
I also, when I read that quote, was
anybody
like,
out there
wow.
relate to that one?
Very, very true, for sure.
Yes. I was in an organization, it seemed like every time a new problem came up, or we got stuck, or people were feeling like, we don't know how to address this situation. Well, let's reorganize.
Yeah.
All right, you go here, you go there, let's do a new director, hey, let's have a new, let's group these departments uh-huh. together now instead of...
That'll fix the problems.
Yes, that really does fix the problem. It's, again, it's just, it's like a lot of people I've seen sometimes, the way they work. They do a lot,
mm-hmm.
like they do a lot of activities, but then when you really look with what they're doing, it's like, they're not really doing
it. Yeah,
it's
so like they've created busy work for themselves yes. so they can feel like they're doing something, but they're not actually accomplishing anything they need to get done.
The exact same thing
yes.
in four different
yes.
formats.
Yes.
I got my book here.
Yes.
Then I got it on an Excel sheet.
Yes.
Then I have this Word document.
Uh-huh.
And then we also put it on SharePoint.
Uh-huh.
And they're working all day mm-hmm. and not getting a whole lot
uh-huh.
done. That's how I feel about constantly reorganizing. I don't have a lot else to add on that. I just think it's a great quote. And I think a lot of managers
mm-hmm.
or heck, even employees out there can relate
oh, yeah.
to it, right? Also, what I like, as we got later into the book, one of the things I liked about that she stressed, and again, as I've said before, production and data is sort of my first love in management. I am a Lean Six Sigma black belt. I've been involved in process improvements. And I only say that not to brag, but maybe to brag, but I also say that is because I do believe in the value of data. But unfortunately, what I have seen is people take data
mm-hmm.
and they think it's telling you this whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that she stresses, yes, data is important. And to get a complete story, you need data.
Yes.
But it is only part of the story. And depending on what kind of data it is and what kind of story you're trying to tell, that data may not be relevant to that story at all.
Yes.
It may have nothing to do with the story that you're trying to tell or the problem you're trying to solve. I really like that she brings that home because, again, what I also like what she does, and I think you had mentioned on this and you might want to expound on it, she ties the data. When you're talking about data, all data is a representation of human behavior or what humans are doing, or your customers or employees. All data is, when you're talking about data, just like organizations, all organization is just a group of people getting
exactly.
together
yeah.
to perform something. Data is just numerical representation of some type of human behavior, right?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. yeah.
And so often it's easy to remove to lose that aspect of
yes.
the data and just start to see it as numbers by themselves.
Yeah, yeah, no. And
I really like that part.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is the inherent issue with data. And I do think, especially managers who might have a background in the more, you know, quote unquote hard sciences or something like that, where they're used to seeing data of like, data that is just numbers or data that is just representing some, you know, biological organism or something or some, you know, yes. astrophysical concept, right? That is data. That's not incorporating human behavior, which is inherently unpredictable, at least so far. And so, and I liked that reminder about, even with all the data in the world, you can't predict the future. Cause she said that I'm probably paraphrasing, but she said that at some point in the book. And I mean, I think obviously in 2002, that was true, but like even 20 years later, and we do have like so much more, and this is not my area of expertise, but from what I understand, we have so much more computing power now than we, and so much more pieces of data that various organizations are gathering on us. And so I think, but even with all of that, we still cannot predict the future.
Because
we can make good guesses, but we can't predict the future.
That's great. And I want to build on that, because it's no different than the information and data we get out of a conversation.
Exactly.
The more information I get from different people, yes, it may get me closer to one solution, but it also just as often brings up more questions than I had before.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's important to remember about data. The more data you get, yeah, it may be solving some of the problems that you're trying to address, but just as often, it's making you aware of problems that you didn't even know exist, or telling you another story you weren't even aware of.
Yeah.
That's why I think, regardless of how much data you get, there's always going to be more questions. And mm-hmm. I think the more data you get, it's going to lead to even more questions, right?
And I do think this, she didn't really touch on this, but it's something that just is occurring to me now. I think another thing that I see even more often on a ground level is people asking for data to be reorganized as a way to, you know, feel like they're doing something or getting more valuable pieces of information when they're not doing that.
Yes, yes.
And I think that that very closely ties to the idea of restructuring organizations to feel like you're doing something. And anyway, that's just a thought that I had. I see that frequently.
I have to constantly talk to my young managers about that because I know I have a propensity. When you first get introduced to data, you're like, whoa, it's like
a million science
you got into. And I've got access to the secret sites that I can get all these numbers. And it's like, look at all this information I have. You get so excited about it, and then you start just trying to apply it willy-nilly to everything.
Yes.
I did that when I first got exposed to it. I think because I am very naturally people-based, I quickly reined myself in and knew immediately that it was not telling me the whole story. And sometimes it was conflicting with what I knew was happening on the ground.
Yes, right? Yes.
So I think I had that advantage because I am just so people-oriented anyway. But there's a lot of my managers, I really have to reel them in. It's like, well, I've got this data. The data says, well, the data is just the data. The data is not really saying anything per se right now, because you don't have enough stuff to put that data into context.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to belabor that point, but I think new managers are so easy to fall into that trap.
Well, some of
data is important. We're not saying that. I'm a big believer in data. I love to have as much information as I can. On this podcast, Rachel knows, I'm constantly checking who's viewing, where they're viewing, how long are they staying tuned in? I love it. But again, I also catch myself making connections that I just don't have enough information to know if that's a true connection.
Yes.
I'm completely inferring. Mm-hmm. I'm putting into the story that there's not enough there to tell me that's really part of the story, right?
Well, I do think that I have seen non-new managers do the same thing, is like, you're asking me to present this data to you in a different way, and it's not going to tell you that much different than what we already know, and I will go spend 4 hours doing it, but it's basically going to tell us what I already told you, but let me go make another chart, anyway.
No, I exactly. Okay, and another thing, and it's sort of related to the data that I like that she emphasizes, is when she starts about talking about profit and profit's role in gauging how your business is doing. Of course, she says profit is important because it does tell a big part of of how your job. If you are a for-profit business,
yes,
and you're not making profit,
that's a problem.
There's a problem.
Yeah.
And it's a problem not just because, well, the shareholders and all that stuff that's become the big rage now. It's because as a business, you have to have profit to be able to do your business.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not making profit, then at least if you're not eventually making profit, then probably you're not selling something or providing a service that people actually want.
Yeah. Now, if you're not like, I don't think Netflix has turned a profit yet, but that's on purpose because they're constantly reinvesting.
Right.
But if your goal is to turn a profit at this time and you haven't, then it is telling you, for a for-profit company that something is not going right. Like you, however, I do like she stresses, again, along with that data, profit is not really what any organization is ultimately about.
Yeah.
Including for-profits. Mm-hmm. It's about what is their purpose. For a for-profit, all profit is one indicator of is, are you in some way being successful in that purpose? Mm-hmm. And are you able to, going to be able to fund that purpose yes. going forward? I really like, of course, she stressed that for the nonprofits because mm-hmm. that's what they're all about, right? Purpose and mission and all that stuff. But I really like that she brought that out so solidly back to, yes, profit is important, but don't confuse profit with purpose. And all organizations ultimately exist to achieve a purpose.
Yeah, profit is ultimately still just another data point that's telling you a picture of the story of your organization, yes. but is hopefully not the only goal of your organization. Yes,
and it is part of the value creation.
Exactly, yeah.
But you're right. It's
a piece.
It's a piece. That's it. And Rachel, that's all the thoughts I have I have more thoughts, but all the thoughts that we got enough time for in this episode about the book, I'll turn it over to you. What you got? I know you have several interesting things that you talked to me about. I'm looking forward to hearing about.
Yeah. So I think the first thing, and I kind of alluded to this before, but just to say it explicitly, I think my favorite part of this book is that it does approach management kind of like a humanities or a quote unquote soft science, right? And, you know, soft science, like your political sciences, your economics, things like that. Right. And so I think, and this may feel very duh to some people out there, but I think because I have literally never taken a college level management course in my life, I had not quite grasp the idea of fitting management into one of those categories. And for whatever reason, the way this book is written, it kind of flipped that switch for me of, oh yes, there's a very humanity / soft science approach that people take to business and management in particular. So I think that was like the biggest thing I got out of the book, like overall.
And just alone, that was the pure result, result that you got reading this book, I am so glad that I recommended it because that's how I have viewed management for many years, for basically my whole time doing it. I have taken a humanities approach to it. Now, I also have degrees in humanities, I'm very biased towards that.
Yeah, and my degrees are in biology and nutrition, so they're not exactly
humanities-based. That alone, I think, is worth you reading the book to sort of flip that switch. And for other people to read the book, that there is other way and just as a effective way to approach this.
Mm-hmm. And my last little summary is I think that the previous two books we read, The Welcome to Management and The First Time Manager, they're kind of like, in my mind, translations for the layman who's like not interested in learning or not at that time, at least interested in learning about the deeper underlying humanity, soft science of management. They are the how-tos, this is all the, let's get rid of all the jargon type terminology. And I think this book started introducing you to the jargon a little bit more and said, here's what this means. Here's what some of the jargon means. Here's like the academic side of management, which I love that kind of stuff. So again, I think that's the excellent point that we brought up before, where not everybody's going to love that. Some people are like, I don't really care about that.
Yeah.
And that's totally fair. But I like that. And I think for some managers, they would really like that.
Yes.
I think there's another quote that she had that I really think kind of, it sums up what draws me to management. And I think this was pretty early in the book, but the quote was, quote, rightly understood, management is a liberal art drawing freely from all the disciplines that help us make sense of ourselves and our world. That's ultimately why it is work worth doing and so hard to do well. End quote. So I think you can see her writing chops there a little dramatic, but I agree with it. I mean, I think that is the piece that it is so hard because it is human people that you're studying basically. And if you don't have a good grasp of how humans, I mean, it pulls from so many things. It pulls from economics. It pulls from, in some cases, political science. It pulls from sociology and, psychology. Like you're pulling all of these different fields together to make people, not make, but to help people work together with other resources to accomplish tasks, right? Yes. And so I think that is, the big, broad, like I said before, 10,000 foot level of what this book is trying to get at. And then just briefly a word to my hard science people, because I do have a degree in biology. And so I do know that, you know, some of this mushy stuff is like, well, this is all fake, made up. This isn't real. This isn't real science. I heard that so many times when I was getting my biology degree. And I do think, fortunately, I was a little protected from some of that, because at the same time as I was getting my biology.
Did I say biology is not a real science? No.
No. All the other sciences are not real science. Exactly. Political science is not real, you know.
Yeah.
Social science is not real science. It's like, of course. And humanities, oh my God, that's not even pretending to be science.
No.
You know, like that.
It's not.
But I do think,
there's aspects of science involved in humanities.
Exactly.
Right?
But even, anyway, even psychology, we were like, sure, whatever. Yeah. So I think, but at the same time, my sister was getting a political science degree. I took a lot of classes with her as like electives because it was a small school. I really liked the professor. And so I was able to kind of in parallel see like, yes, it's different. And yeah, it's not like as exact as what we're learning in biology, but we're studying human behavior, and that's an incredibly important piece of how the world works. Like, arguably, we don't even get to study biology if humans didn't develop the scientific method, right?
Yeah.
And humans developed the scientific method.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't exist until humans created it, basically.
And it happened through all those sloppy things that we do as humans.
Exactly. And
right?
I took one singular philosophy course that talked about, that its focus was, you know, the histories of scientific revolution and like scientific method. And I think because I had that background going into a lot of my quote unquote hard science classes, I knew the only reason we're even considering what we do today as science is because of philosophy. And philosophy is by no means a hard science. So anyway, long tangent, but I think that to me is why my call to hard science managers is, it's not going to be fun or comfortable, and you may not be able to actually do it, but it is real. Like, you will see eventually, if you give it enough time, you will see that, yeah, you're not going to be able to predict things like you can in a lab, but it is vital that you at least attempt to make a best guess and take some learning away from the liberal arts and quote unquote soft sciences and try to incorporate that into your management system. Because if you try to manage with only hard data, you're not managing and you're going to fail. and I think it is worth it and it is rewarding. That's kind of my like pitch.
I think a great sum up is, we've said many times, just because it's less tangible doesn't mean it's less real.
Exactly.
Or that it has less consequences, ultimately. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's really all I've got to talk about. So.
Okay. I think some of your points you already have sort of worked in during the conversation. So just as a way of sort of bringing this baby home and putting the ribbon on top of it, I think we should just say a couple things, and some of them will be repetitive, but just say a couple things of what we really like the book and liked about the book and why we recommend it so highly, especially for certain type of managers or even certain type of employees. As she said, she also wrote this book for everyone, everyone, because we're all impacted by management. We're all impacted by organization. And that'd be the one thing I say I love about this book.
Yes.
That she really, me being such a managed file, can you say that? Management file?
You just said it. I think you could say it.
File, as I am and I have become, is I really like that she kept returning to the impact that management has had. And that management, when performed properly and when instituted properly,
improve society.
Can improve society and have good positive results.
Exactly.
I really like that part of it. I also like what you said. I like that she added a little bit of a humanities approach towards it. Early on, when I first started reading, I had not really looked up about her much, what her background was. But when she started saying, well, compare management to a story. She was talking about one of the examples. She said, a business model.
Yes.
When she said, okay.
All a model is a good story, basically.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
And I was like,
interesting.
And I don't know if unconsciously that drove me to learn more about her. And as soon as she came on and she was being interviewed by someone and she started telling, I said, there you go.
Yeah.
I could recognize a fellow humanities person a mile away. But anyway, I really enjoyed that she took that approach to it. And we really was getting away from this hard tack world, business world that we so much of us associate management and organizations and all that stuff with, and bringing it back down to what it exists for. As I've said now, probably 10 times in this episode alone, it's about getting things done through the efforts of others for everyone involved mm-hmm. can achieve a common purpose.
Yeah.
Does it always play out that way?
No.
Is management always carried out with the appropriate values and effectively? No, but good God, no. Even when it is, are always the things that are accomplished good mm-hmm. for benefit? No. But you can say things that about any human endeavor.
Exactly.
We can talk about that with the military. We can talk that about religion. We definitely can talk that about government, right? Yeah. But it has the capability,
yes.
when done right, towards the right purpose, with the right intent, to create good.
It's a tool, right?
It's a tool.
It's a tool, as we've said before. It can be used for quote-unquote good and evil.
Or a practice. Practice. Like we were, when you brought up your sister earlier, I was thinking about lawyers. Like anything.
Yeah.
It's a practice.
Yeah.
It can be used.
For good or evil.
It can be used to defend the multi-billionaire uh-huh. drug dealer, or it can be used to help that common person that can't afford a lawyer, like mm-hmm. your sister mm-hmm. does. I really mm-hmm. admired that. Helping these people out mm-hmm. that otherwise in this environment, you cannot operate our legal system without someone
exactly.
that is skilled in operating mm-hmm. that legal system. Mm-hmm. It is a practice. Mm-hmm. It can be good, used to take it down to the most fundamental good or evil.
Good
right?
or evil, exactly.
Does it make the practice itself?
Yeah.
So that's what I really liked about it. What about you?
You know, I really, again, as somebody who has no educational experience with management, I think it was incredibly approachable to read. I really liked it introducing some of these, some of the terms and the quote unquote jargon that I think I had not really heard about before. It mentioned the Peter Drucker many times, which you've talked to me, Stuart, about before.
We're
going to get to that initially. But honestly, it got me a little bit excited. I mean, I'm sure I won't be that excited when I'm reading it, but it got me excited about it. I was like, oh, okay, I see. So I think it's a very good primer, I think, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think it's a good primer.
She had a relationship, as we said, with him.
Yes.
So you're right. It is a good primer to sort of the type of stuff that we will be getting more into Drucker, because you will see in Drucker that same championing of management, of acknowledging all the warts and all, but saying when done right, it's an instrument for good.
Exactly.
It can be a great instrument to further human endeavor.
Yeah. And I think it can help for people who do need to feel a sense of purpose, with their jobs. It, I think, provides that more so than the other two books.
That's great.
Insight. It helps provide you. It provides context, which I think is a lot of what purpose is. It provides context, a bit of historical, a bit of real life, real world, big picture context of what you're doing and why it matters. Whereas the other books say, here's how to do what you're doing well.
Yeah.
So
bottom line, great book, especially one that was originally written when Amazon was just shaking up the book industry. Yeah, she predicted that.
It's
really shaking up the book industry.
And it really did.
It really did. Folks, as always, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate your time, and we will see you next episode.
Bye, everybody.